What's going on, everyone? Welcome to this week's episode of River City 93. I'm your host, as always, Elliot Barr. And joining me on the show, who's probably had a good Sunday nap, or, well, I did. I had a wonderful Sunday nap. Oh, it's Mr. Matt Myers. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good. Doing all right. You know, it's a good vacation week. You boys held it down last week pretty well. Enjoyed listening back to it. And then, we'll talk more about what happened after that.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that. How was vacation, first and foremost? Did you enjoy yourself? What did you do?
Sat myself on a beach in Outer Banks. What other Richmonder vacation is there than the beach in the Outer Banks?
Yep, that's the good old OBX.
Matt, question. Did you even get in the water, or did you just, like, pop yourself in the sand, get a good tan, as we can tell? Like, even touch the water?
Of course. I mean, come on. Okay. Got to get in there and, you know, cool off and everything. I mean, definitely had a fish, you know, swim into me and scare the living crap out of me at one point in the water. That was fun.
we almost lost that. We almost went down. All right, that's hilarious. And also, our other co-host joining us on this show is Mr. Chenier. How are you, sir?
I feel like it's Groundhog Day. But what you gonna do?
Yeah. you don't like watching reruns of these games?
No, I was never a big rerun fan. That's why I was happy when streaming came out.
Yeah, and even that's starting to get remakes of everything now. So
I know.
Have fun with that. We had some kind of fun with the Kickers this past weekend. Richmond 2-2 draw with Lexington SC. A game that we were coming in the table. We knew we needed a win to get out, get back in the playoff race. I mean, this team's still in the playoff race, but you know what I mean. Like, get above the playoff line. It's hard to describe it. It was a wonderful first half. Second half is very meh. But if you want to be real about it, Neil Vigneault decided to have his best game of the season. And I kind of would like to start off with that point. I know I normally start talking about the line and stuff like that, but I want to start off with Neil Vigneault and just start off with the positives, because that's going to get me through this podcast. Neil had his best performance. Two great goals. First half looked very dominant on the ball, looked very controlling in this game, and he looked back to his old self.
Yeah, absolutely. I think – Elliot, I think especially you and I probably deserve all the credit for this.
I think we do. I think we do.
Yep.
How many?
I second that.
Inspirational, tough talks have we had with Neil via the podcast, so far this year, where we kind of, laid it out on the line of, son, you got to step yourself up or else sit yourself down. And I think the message got through, because, I mean, look at that. First goal. Not going to lie, that first goal, I was almost ready to, scream my head off at him, for not shooting, that first, opportunity he had. But then he cut back and finished, so I was okay with it at that point. But, we've seen him score that kind of goal before, away at Madison, last year, I think it was, especially. He hit a very, similar type of goal. And kind of, what we've talked about before, too, I think all of us at various times of shoot the ball.
Yeah.
And maybe something good will happen from it.
Yeah. Like, it's okay to shoot. Just take a chance. You never know what can happen. And, I mean, you saw it there. We saw what happened. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, it just seems – I don't know if Neil's kind of going through, like, a new phase of you know, being out of position at sorts and playing a lot more in the wing than we've seen him in the past, so playing a little bit more centrally. But Shanier, seeing Neil get back to his old ways of kind of controlling a game and taking a game by the scruffs, it's good to see.
Absolutely. That first goal, I mean, I just, it was good. That's old school Neil right there. For him to, you know, he channeled a little bit of Zaka at the beginning of that, like, you know, getting challenged to the ground and still gaining, keeping control of the ball, that scrappiness to keep the ball at his feet, even though he's on the ground, getting back up, you know, just curling it around Smart as he drove past him after Smart knocked him down. And then back to his smooth self, just cutting inside, making the defender bite, and the defender makes the mistake of turning his, kind of being slightly with his back to Neil, and Neil takes that opportunity to cut behind him, and there's no way he's going to be able to turn around in time to block that. And then he just rifles the shot across to the far post. Very, very beautifully done.
Yeah.
And then the second one, of course, just a beautiful free kick.
I feel like that free kick's been coming for him for a while, because how many times have we seen Neil, like, especially, what was it, I think last week, he had one that just hit right outside of the post. This week, I mean, hits it. It is always, you know, it's a good free kick when you get the goalkeeper to hit, like, that diving save that he gets stuck in the air. Impatient almost. Like, that's what I knew. I was like, oh, this is going to be a banger. And it was. It was so good that it ended up on what was it, SportsCenter Top 10, which I didn't even know was still a thing, because I haven't watched SportsCenter forever.
I don't think too many people watch SportsCenter anymore. I don't know. It seems to be losing its popularity.
didn't realize that. But here's a couple of stats from Neil that really showed, like, his dominance within this game. You know, he had he set 10 ground duels, won 7 of them. Three dribbles attempted. He had 2 of those. Won both of his aerial duels, which is surprising because Neil's not a, you know, vertically tall person. and out of his 49 passes attempted, he connected on 43 of them, with 35 of them going forward or, you know, in a positive direction. So that shows you, like, you know, Neil was pulling all the strings last night. Taking Neil away, looking back at it, looking at the formation, when it all came out, raise your hand if you thought this was a 3-5-2. I certainly did.
I was a little miffed at what was going on, but I was like, all right, we'll go with it. It did look like a 3-5-2 with Hornsby and Fitz playing as wingbacks, kind of to match Lexington's 3-5-2.
Yeah. But every website that I go on to, it listed as a 4-3-3 with Simon Fitz in the
midfield. You know, we've had this conversation how many times? You know better than to look at those websites, all those.
No. Because at first, Flat Mob had Vinos playing left wing and Sirikowski in the midfield three. Barnathan was in the midfield three and Fitch was at right back. That's what it showed on Foot Mob before the game started. I don't know if they changed it later on. I didn't check. Google shows Barnathan as right back and Vignol back where he's supposed to be at left midfield and Fitch at right midfield. I was like, okay, that none of this is exactly what it's supposed to be. So I'm going to watch the game and find out what's really going on.
Yeah. But no, I just imagine a situation where Darren's like paying all of these websites, like, look, we're going to play a 3-5-2, but I need you to put 4-3-3 just so we can keep consistency. Like, he's just paying all websites to put 4-3-3.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, I'm sure Darren is telling people unnecessary things. That seems accurate to him.
Yeah. But, I mean, even in this, man, like, the first half, let's talk about the first half. Well, also about it. No Belmar, nor Gordon, nor no Bitten. So no attacking options. Like, it seemed like it was going to be very sturdy defensively, which kind of makes me question more now the second half. But, yeah, those players were not on the bench at all. Yeah. For pretty much the guys that were going to go were going to go, for, in a sense.
I mean, there are still attacking options off the bench. There are different ones. You know, you had Luke coming back on the bench. You know, Landon made another bench appearance, got in at the very end of the game again. So it's not the ones we're used to seeing, you know, but it's not like they've been doing anything for us in the last month, month and a half, 2 months even. So why not try something different?
Yeah, no, most definitely. I mean, even so much, when you go look at the heat map or touch map that we're privy to, folks, if you want to know the difference between, like, Premier League and, like, USL League One, is the amount of information that's put out there for you, because the USL website on stats is not great. It's very tough.
I mean, you can get rid of that part about on stats. You also League website's not great.
Yeah, no, not at all. not at all. So when you go look at the average formation, we all got a sense of is a back three with Ani, Chris Cole, and Dakota. Then in the midfield, from what I saw, it seemed to be Zaka, Zhao, and Simon and Hornsby. Neil's kind of in front of them with Emmy and Sarakowski in front of him, from my understanding, right?
I think it just depends on how you want to organize it and break it down. Like, you could call it five in the back if you wanted to, with, you know, Hornsby and first half Simon, second half Jake pushing high. You can call it a 3-5-2 with those, you know, two positions more as midfielders. So I think it's all semantics, you know, really, you know, but the key difference is, you know, the three dedicated central defenders, in theory, releasing Hornsby and right back, insert here, you know, be able to push up higher with a little bit less defensive responsibility.
Yeah. Shanair, did you see anything out of this new shape or lineup that caught your attention in the first half?
In the first half, I did see Vinyals and Sarakowski had a little bit more closer connection in terms of interchanging and moving around each other. Sarakowski floated around a lot more in this game than I've ever seen him do before. He popped up on the right side a lot of times and in the middle. And I think he was just allowed to float around and just find the pockets of space to be dangerous in if he could. And whenever he did, he was always very key in finding Neil whenever he could get the ball at his feet. And if he was on that left side, he would find Neil. Terzaghi also was linking up with Neil a lot, which fed into Neil's improvement in this game. I do feel that there was a lot of depending on him to kind of dictate the attack, and it, a lot, practically every single attack, some way, shape, or form went through Vinyals.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it wasn't for a bad thing either. I mean, I felt like in the first half, Richmond did a really good job of attacking the wings, being quick in their passes, you know, something that they got away from in the second half. But they were like, it seemed like they wanted to play with a tempo. Like, it was, we're going to take the tempo to Lexington. We're going to speed up the style of play. We're going to play direct-ish. Even so much that, like, I was noticing that Terzaghi was doing a lot of dropping back. And that seemed to be, like, a trend this year. Like, where Terzaghi, because before, like, Terzaghi's thing was, all right, I'm going to stay up on the center backs and I'm going to play, quote-unquote, protein. Like, I'm going to just wait for the opportunities to come to me and kind of pretty much stay within the 6 and 18-yard box. But now his role's changed to be a little bit more like dropping back more and kind of help the build-up play. Things they get more touches on the ball.
I feel like he's always done that to a certain degree, though. Like, how many times has he, you know, just been able to help, you know, get the ball out of the back and just get himself hacked down, you know, near the center circle or something, you know, to be able to relieve, you know, pressure? you know, things like that. So it's not a matter. I don't think he's just been like hugging, back shoulders of defenders, for 4 years. But maybe there's a little bit more of that, probably because the ball's not finding him otherwise.
Yeah,
he'd barely get any touches on the ball.
Yeah, like you seem like where like in years past it might have happened. I don't know. Like if Emmy get 30 touches, it might happen like 5 or 10 times. It feel like this year now is like that's Emmy's key role. Like, no, we need you to drop back in to help get the ball up forward, because if you don't, we don't have any other way of getting this ball up.
Yeah. On that related note, I agree with all the stuff you were saying about how the team was playing in the first half. The other thing I thought was really useful is with the different shape, the team was able to control the ball in the middle a lot more. Like, how many times did we see ball get half cleared out and there's 3 or 4 kickers there, some combination of Zaka or Zhao, center backs, whoever, there just to be able to smother whichever Lexington player happened to be in the area and easily get the ball back and be able to repossess. And I feel like a lot of times this year we've been seeing, the ball would pop out and inevitably it would feel like the other team's going to get it. And, those scenarios where I think you all mentioned it last week with Noko, and we've mentioned other games where it felt like you're playing, 15, 16 against 11 out there on the field.
Yeah. I mean, this person, I felt good. I mean, despite what happened with like Lexington's ghost penalty, positive first half, but let's go ahead. Let's dive into these goals and whatnot. We kind of already talked about it somewhat, Shanair, but Neil's first goal pretty much came from Neil creating his own moment and taking a shot, which is good. Team needs to do it more because good things happen when you just try stuff.
Yeah, and I know we constantly have been criticizing these USL League One commentators, but I really had a really good laugh when they were showing the replay of that goal, and the commentator said that Neil Vigneault is just sashayed through the defense to score the goal. That just gave me a good laugh. To be honest with you, that kind of was the best description. Of course, as we know, Neil is not known for pace. He does not really have pace. But they couldn't touch him. They just couldn't touch him as he just got up off the ground. Smart is behind him now. He can't touch him. He can't put a hand on him, or else that's definitely a yellow card at least. And it just the way he moves with the ball, no one could get close to him. And I think it was Murillo who was in front of him, who he kind of turned inside out before taking the shot. And it was like none of the he probably had about 3 or 4 Lexington defenders around him, and none of them could touch him, and he just gets the shot off just with ease.
Yeah. And then another worrying trend that's kind of creeping into the kickers' play this year is we score a goal, and right afterwards we give up a goal because they went straight up route one. They went, got the kickoff, went straight to the wing, got a corner from it. And at this moment, I'm not going to lie. Like, it was a corner. I was just like, just get the ball and get it out the box. Like, do not mess around with it. Ball kind of goes to the looping back post. Akira goes to go punch it, like as he always does. Nico Brown, for the second game in a row now, has caused a penalty where it caused great bodily harm to him, which after it is scored, he is able to celebrate as if nothing happened to him. Got contact near the back of the head area, fell down, ref calls a PK. And guys, if I'm not mistaken, Akira has faced a multitude of penalties, hasn't saved one.
I mean, with regards to that, I mean, PKs at the best of times are a toss-up. To a certain extent, all you can do is make an educated guess on where the attacker is going to place the ball, because the game has evolved so much that all the way up until the player's foot hits the ball, that player can make it look like he's going one way but that definitely is not absolutely the way he's going. And so it's one of those things, you got to make an educated guess, and he guessed wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that's not
so.
Let's be real. That's not the conversation point of, oh, no, Akira didn't save a penalty.
No, it's
you
expect
it, that.
At this point, I haven't had a good bout of luck over the past couple of days with PKs. We talked about it yesterday, Elliot, on Can I Kick It? but this to me was not a PK. Akira has every right to go for that ball. Who was it who was going for the header? Was it Brown?
Yeah, Nico Brown.
Nico Brown is trying to head the ball towards goal. Akira is trying to punch the ball away from goal. If Akira connected with Nico Brown's head and not the ball, why did the ball go towards the corner flag? That's my question. If it's a penalty kick, it defied physics, and I don't think that's the case. That was a bad call, straight up and down. That was a bad call by the ref. That should not have been a PK.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I was literally just watching it back again. You know, he's not trying to head the ball towards goal. He's just running in that general direction, even because you know he's running towards the end line. There's literally for the physics. There's no way he would have been able to do anything. I can even get convinced that, you know, okay, maybe, you know, Akira doesn't make contact with the ball. I think he does. I think that's why the ball goes so far, you know, to the, you know, the touch line. And if you want to call that a penalty, then I could probably get there for that. I've watched way too much soccer in my life. I've never seen that given. Like, you know, keepers get away with absolute murder in the air all the time, like full on basically miss the ball, like, you know, two hands right to the face, and it's like, oh well, no big deal, whatever, you know, sort of thing. And this looks, you know, as benign, as, you know, commonplace as you'll ever see. My bigger issue is, why is this another corner? In this case, Zaka doesn't clear it cleanly. He just, the ball hits him and it just bounces high into the box, you know, that forces this situation. It's like, my man, just get the ball out.
You know, yeah, you know what?
Defending corners, clearing corners again. That's where my other perturbance with this came in.
Yeah, I agree with you on both points. First off, like, this is something that you never see called. I clearly remember, I can't remember who it was against, but when Drogba was playing for Chelsea, when he got completely just flatlined in midair by the goalkeeper, who didn't get anywhere near the ball, if it wasn't for the fact that he passed out before even hitting the ground, the play wouldn't have stopped. Play would have continued. So it's like, if that's not a PK, how is this a PK when Akira connects with the ball? But rewinding even more than that, you look at it and it's like, that should have never happened in the first place. That should have been a bread and butter, hoof it long clearance by Zaka. And I think they've gotten into their heads a little bit with set pieces, and there's a sense of freezing panic that sets in with them. They're like, oh gosh, here we go again. And rather than just doing what they know how to do, they panic and they freeze and they don't just take it straight forward. That's the only thing I can think about with this type of situation, that Zaka should have just gotten that ball out of there.
Yeah, it does. It's just, I want to ask you guys this question because I just found the stat. I was looking for it. How many penalty kicks since Akira's been in Richmond do you think he has faced?
Was that 5 years? Say 14?
Yeah, no. Not 14. Shanir, how many do you think he's faced?
Probably about, I'd say somewhere around the same. I'd say probably 16, 17.
Mm-mm. He's faced 9 penalties.
That's all. Wow.
Yeah, since 2020. So
no, you left out 2019 then.
Oh yeah. Well, they don't show me 2019. They only show me last 4 years, I should say.
Well, you didn't know life didn't happen before COVID.
Yeah. So he's only faced 9, 2 in 2020, 1 in 2021, 4 in 2022, 2 this year. He's only managed to save – he hasn't saved any.
I was going to say, I didn't remember any.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like you said before, Shanae, it's not his fault. Like, one, Zaka didn't just clear the ball out. And you're right, on a penalty kick, it's kind of – 80% the striker, 20% what the goalkeeper does at that point. And I mean, even there, it's 1-1. But I do like how Richard responded afterwards. They kind of responded with, like, they didn't kind of sulk, which, you know, has happened before to this team. They kind of got back into it and played with some aggression. So much so that Emmy has the whole – are we calling it Twitter or X? I don't want to call it X because then – but yeah, I had all of USL League One social media upset because Emmy did the thing that they wish their attackers did and tricked the ref into calling a foul on top of the box.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it quite a few times. I get what the ref saw. Yeah. You know, Emmy, you know, comes in and he puts his hip, in front of the defender. I don't remember. Don't really care who it was. And I think if that guy makes any contact on the ball at all, nothing's going to happen. You know, neither one of them end up touching the ball, but because Emmy's able to get in there, it looks like he gets hip checked, and he ends up getting the call that way. I think the defender didn't help his cause any by, as soon as contact happens, he throws his hands up in the "oh, I didn't do anything" bit, because that just draws more attention to it, and I feel like that's the most common cause of getting caught is drawing attention to yourself and saying, "oh, it wasn't me."
Yeah, doesn't cause at all. Nils free kick, absolute banger. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Inspiration, because I mean, I was defending them on this, but y'all were all just crapping on these guys for not scoring on set pieces. So once again,
they did everything I wanted to do the first half outside of giving up a goal right after a goal. So my crapping on them is working somewhat.
No, you're inspiring.
Yeah, there we go.
Your like motivation.
Motivating them
to the hearts of the people.
Right. But second half, I guess we'll go ahead and talk about it now. We were first forced into one substitution. Don't know if it's injury related. Don't know if it was a tactic thing. I'm assuming it had to be injury related. I'm assuming that. Like,
you would think / hope, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm hoping it's not, all right, Darren saw tactics. It was just like, all right, we're going to take the coat out, put Simon back to his normal position, and bring on Jake Meacham. Not saying anything's wrong with that, but you would think that sub happens later in the half versus right at 45. So hoping the best there for Dakota. But it seemed like that substitution had a big impact on how Richmond played in the second half, and also like some tactics thing, because they came out flat the second half. Like, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, do you remember a shot on goal? Or Shanair, do you remember a shot on goal in the second half?
They had a good flurry the first 10 minutes.
No. I don't think there were any actual shots that I know of, because, like I said, there were a lot of situations in which I could see holes in the Lexington defense that we were not capitalizing on. And it goes back to what we were talking about how it seems like the kickers just don't – they're always reluctant to shoot. They're always second-guessing whether they should shoot. And, like, I remember there was one situation, I believe it was Sierakowski, who was at the top of the 18 with his back to goal, receives a pass from, I think it was Neil, And as he's running towards him, Neal passes the ball and keeps his run going. And literally, that was a situation all Sierkowski had to do was just lay it off. And Neal could have just put his foot right through it. He was running in that direction. And rather than do that, there was hold up, kind of a 2-3 touches on the ball with pressure behind him. And then they pass it back and we start again. And it goes all the way back to Nathan Aune. And then we come forward again. And it was like, you had that open space down the middle. You didn't take it. And it was that over and over and over again. And then the second goal goes and I'm like, all right, this is done. It was frustrating.
Like, we just take a deep sigh because, I mean, it's the same thing over and over again. You know, it's kind of like, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again. And it's kind of like the same thing now with the kickers. Like, we have an amazing first 45, and then we have kind of a blah second 45. A trend that I was noticing, and I'm glad you guys picked up because I wanted to make sure I wasn't going crazy, was Neal Vinyals. His position seemed to shift a lot from the first half, where he seemed to be a lot more on the wing, kind of that half space, and was able to dictate play from out there, and it kind of forced Lexington to be stretched. And now with Neal picking the ball up more centrally in the second half, it seemed as if Lexington was just like, oh, he's coming more inward? All right, well, we're just going to not collapse numbers inside, but we're going to kind of crowd the midfield a little bit more and make things a little bit tougher for Richmond to build out, who was – they seemed like they were comfortable just making a safe pass. Like, if Akira's first pass couldn't go out to the wing, then he would pass it to Zaka, who would drop in. Zaka would go to the side, and they would kind of just be stuck in this backwards cycle back there. And Lexington holds name, it seemed like every time we did that, they just kind of just stepped up their press a little bit more, you know, every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think part of it was just to how the game was, you know, going. So, because we were talking about, you know, Emmy, you know, drops back a bit sometimes to be able to find the ball, Neal trying to, you know, drop inside to be able to find the ball a little bit more as well. But yeah, I mean, it's something about these, you know, second halves going in, you know, with leads, you know, where, okay, the opposition, you know, makes the adjustments. When we, you know, not completely randomly, but to us, you know, randomly went 4-4-2 all of a sudden. You know, we had a really good, you know, first half, and then that second half, I think it was Knoxville that day, just cut us open, you know, like butter all through the second half. You know, today, you know, shocked probably Lexington just as much as it did us. They were rolling out 3-5-2 all of a sudden. And second half, you know, they made some adjustments to it now that they've seen it. And we don't have that answer. We don't have that counter adjustment, you know, coming in. So, you know, it wasn't awful by any means in the second half. In the first half of the half, they did a really good job of keeping possession. Like, there's probably a good, seeming like 5 or 6 minutes where ball never even went out of bounds. Like, it was just, it was mostly pinging around in our own half the whole time, but there was nothing dangerous going on. I feel like probably one stretch where, you know, Akira probably got, you know, the ball passed him 5 or 6 different times, which, you know, there's pros and cons to that, but, you know, it was not exciting, but it was, you know, controlled. But like you said, Lexington, you know, started to build on that, and they, you know, inched up a little bit more and inched up a little bit more and inched up a little bit, you know, more, and took away that easy outlet to Aune or Zaka, and eventually forced Akira to start to have to go longer with it, which is where the second goal ultimately originated.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, dang, man, you did a great job with that line, not sizing that. I guess my main frustration really just comes from the fact of, from Darren's point, I wish we had the opportunity to ask him this right after the game, of just why is it that possession in front of our own box, like, why is that such a pivotal part of this team right now? Like, why is that a thing this team has to do? It doesn't seem like the players are, like, choosing to do it. It seems like something that's being drilled and instructed. Because I would think, like, all right, it's 2-1. You know, we've been able to show that Lexington's very fragile on the wings. Let's get him behind him again. Can kind of keep that momentum up and force them to change again, you know, even though they make changes, keep them to keep questioning them, keep them thinking, keep them moving. And it just seemed kind of like we went in the safety bubble. We were fine with, all right, let's go with the simple safe possession. Let's kind of possess it, you know, like you said, the 5-6 minute spell where they kind of keep it within their own box. But I don't know. Like, I wish we would move that kind of play of just possessing the ball up 20, 30 yards and not having directly in our half. Like, even much so, like, there was one pass from Zaka that went, you know, they're trying to possess it in the back that he makes a pass back to a center back. I think it's Fitz at that moment. And it goes out and it gives Lexington off the hook and it gives them a corner kick. You feel me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's not that killer instinct
on this team.
Yeah, you know, where exactly. There's that desire to go and, all right, we got the lead. Now let's, you know, I don't know, pick your favorite, you know, violent allegory, you know, here, you know, sort of, you know, thing. And it's, okay, we've got the lead. Let's try not to mess it up instead. And inevitably, you know, try not to mess something up. Something's probably going to go wrong.
Yeah. But that's the thing that we have seen this year. Like, this team versus, let's even take last year or 2021, for instance, like, they haven't shown that ability to confidently dictate and control games. They haven't shown that this year. So I don't understand why Darren is doing that here in this moment where it's like, all right, this game is still winning in the balance. It's not like it's a Richmond Kickers a home game, for instance. This is an away game, so Lexington is going to be a little bit more juiced of it. It seems he's just coming off of a 4-1 or 4-0 win against Union. No, yeah, 4-0 win against Union Omaha.
Yeah, 3-0.
So they got energy. They feel like they could get back in the moment. Even so much so, like, you look at some of the press post-game moments said by Crane Lex about how, you know, they believe in themselves. They believe they could get back into it. I don't have that same belief with Richmond in the second half just because of how we play. Like you said, like, they're playing safe. They're playing not to lose. They're playing, like, it's almost as if, like, they're shackled and they're afraid of, like, I don't want the pressure of messing it up in the moment, and thus you will mess it up in the moment. Like, it just seems very, very, like, I don't want to be the one that messes up. Like, that's the kind of feel that I'm getting right now.
Yeah, I mean, the wild thing is, though, we've seen the inverse before, right? You know, there's the second Greenville away game, first half was bad, and then, you know, they fought it back and got those 2 second half goals, you know, away against, you know, Fuego, you know, they, you know, fought back, got 2 second half goals, you know, to get the win. I mean, we've seen the bad side where the first half was the good part and the second half, you know, fell to pieces too, but, you know, it's more the full 90 minutes. We've seen that this team, when they are on, you know, for even just a 45, they can play with anybody in this league. Right. And that's what I think makes all this more, even more frustrating. You know, it's not a matter of the talent isn't there, you know, because we've seen it in more than just blips. You know, we just need to figure out why, you know, it can't be harnessed for, you know, more than one half or even 60 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's an issue of they just, because a lot of times you see, and if you go back, probably about 2 years, that was the case with Tormenta. But Tormenta, it was an issue of they just run out of gas after 60 minutes. And it was just, if you could hold out for those 60 minutes, you know, stay on the ropes for those 60 minutes. And once those 60 minutes are up and Tormenta run out of gas, then you can lay it on them thick. But that's not the case with this Kickers team. It's like they're intentionally playing conservative. And it's really telling to me, especially when you look at last year, we had no problem putting games to bed. Like, if we were in a situation where we were up by one goal, we came out the second half, be like, all right, let's make this 2 goals and make sure that they cement this win. And even if after 2 goals, we'd cautiously try and go for even a third goal in terms of being in the lead. And sometimes it would come off, sometimes it wouldn't. But at the end of the day, we were winning far more games because of the fact that we would put games to bed and we would keep the other team on the ropes for the entire game. It's like, here, we come out in the second half parking the bus. And that just invites the pressure. And that's what I've always had as a criticism to that idea of fully parking the bus. Once you do that, you are inviting the pressure. And anything can happen when a team is desperate to score. So
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. It's basically at this point you're looking at a team that's telling them, all right, we're up in the lead, but go ahead and come at us. I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a weird scenario which Neil almost had a first half hat trick.
Yeah.
Because he had a goal in a 37 minutes and Emil like barely got to. Like if Emil doesn't get his peaky to it, that ball's in the back of the net and we're looking at this game totally different, right? But also
there are more than a few of those. Yeah. Probably three or four. And you know, you had that little bit of a thought just knowing how this goes of is this gonna come back to bite us that it's only 2-1 at halftime.
Yeah. And I mean it's just that it just I don't know why this team let up. Why Darren, why the coaching staff were okay with the letting up, like even if you can see it at that moment of where, because Simon Fitch's own goal happened, because Balogun comes on and he's just really just, I feel like his main job was just supply crosses. Like they feel like this is all he was doing. Because they took Nico Brown out and he's just pretty much a simple ball across the box. And Matt, me and you were talking about earlier, like what was the communication like between Akira and Simon? Because we've seen a similar moment like that in the first half where Akira's coming out to gather a ball, but Hornsby cuts across him in the first minute and it goes up for a corner. It seems like here Simon is checking his shoulder to make sure to see if anyone else is making a late run. He picks his right foot up, but it taps off his left heel. And I mean, Simon at that moment was having a good game. And he still did, even after this. But it's just unfortunate to see for in that circumstance for Simon. Because, and I'm hoping like a moment like this doesn't weigh too heavy on him, and ruin the rest of his season or anything like that. But it was kind of our own infliction. You know, we were giving Lexington chances to create moments. You know, we weren't just controlling the game.
Yeah, I think that own goal, it's I'd say probably 70% of own goals are scored that way. You're running back towards your own goal and you have that dangerous cross come in, that outswinging cross. It's tough to deal with when you're running back towards your own goal. And like you said, Fitch took his eyes off the ball for half a second to make sure that he was alone and just clumsy and unlucky, and it happens. At the end of the day, I would hope that he wouldn't, let that haunt him for too long. Then the night after, he should get over that, because that's just bad luck in that situation. So my biggest issue is the fact that that type of run from Balogun was happening over and over and over and over again. Because of that, we were not forcing Balogun to have to drop back. Balogun was able to stay further up the field because we were sitting so deep. And so now he has try after try after try getting the ball down that wing and figuring out a way to get that ball into the box.
Yeah. And it really just felt as if it didn't feel as if there was any recognition of what his position was from a kicker standpoint. Like, Balogun thing was, all right, I'm just going to stand in this half space between where Ani and Hornsby is, and I'm just going to run in this slot. And I feel like they didn't recognize that.
Yeah, at the same time, if he wants to stay, out in that area and, just head down, pump crosses into nobody in the box, that shouldn't actually hurt us.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't hurt us. It shouldn't. But
and you could see that afterwards, there wasn't really any, I guess the best way to say, highlight worthy pass from him apart from the own goal. Not really. Nothing else was that dangerous. But if it happens enough time, the rule of numbers, eventually Murphy's Law is going to take into effect and something bad happens.
Yeah. I want to see what you guys think about this. Like, in the inverse, is there any way how what Darren was looking at doing? Because I think the blame in the second half does lay at Darren's feet. I think 60% lay at Darren's feet. Can you look and see what Darren was thinking about with the injury, or I'm not going to put it out there, the substitution of Dakota, how you had to change formation a little bit? Do you think Darren has a defense for going the way how he played out the second half?
I mean, if we're assuming it was injured and he wants to keep the same shape, I think that's the only sub you can really make right there, because I don't know if we're at the point where we're putting, you know, Beckett, you know, in there for extended, you know, defensive minutes quite yet. Or, I mean, I guess you can maybe say put Chandler in there as a center back. Don't really love that option, since I don't think he's actually played center back at all this year. So on that level, makes sense. You can make the argument that, okay, if you've got to, you know, pull out Dakota at that point, maybe you switch the shape, you know, up then, you know, to maybe put in Suko right at the start of the, you know, half and go to the four mid, you know, midfield look instead, because we've seen Awning and Cole play center back, you know, together before, and they've been fine.
Yeah,
you know, with that, and leaves you a little more flexibility, you know, for if Jake needs to come in later, you know, because we know Hornsby is a coin flip to be able to go 90 at any point.
Yeah.
So, but I don't blame him on, you know, what the sub was. Again, I think there's some sort of mentality that's been built in this team, you know, though, around, you know, the aggression in the second half and the style of play. And yeah, and that's got to, you know, to some degree fall back on the coaching staff.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt like this team is, I mean, once again, I feel like it's kind of, we're saying the same thing over and over again. Like, the team's stuck in a ride, it's stuck in neutral. Yeah. The same kind of lines that we're saying about, but it's the trends that we're seeing aren't changing. You know?
Well, we're watching the same thing every single week, so why wouldn't we say the same thing every single week?
Yeah.
I feel like you could take any podcast that we've had this week of a draw after a loss and just insert it here, because I haven't seen anything different. Like, I mean, I put the tweet out there, but like, this team, luckily enough, hasn't had back-to-back losses, but they still haven't been able to string together back-to-back wins either.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we could go ahead and kind of real quick before we move on to talk about our upcoming Derby game. Anything else from this game you guys want to mention or kind of talk about?
I just think, in a nutshell, I think there are certain things that are being overthought. I mean, if you're doubtful of Dakota and you want to take him off, why not just put Suko in for Dakota and have your typical midfield three of Suko, Vinyals, and Zaka, rather than shuffling things around and creating a more complicated situation? I mean, go back to what we already know. And the only difference from the normal back seven is Cole instead of Dakota. And like you said, Elliot, Nathan and Cole have worked together just fine. Or that was you, Matt, who said that. I mean, they've worked together just fine. That's not an issue. So if you're going to take off Dakota because you're not sure, you don't want to aggravate an injury or whatever the case was, you want to take him off? Put in Justin. I mean, Justin works with the other two in the midfield on a regular basis so far this season. Stick with what you know, at least.
Yeah. Matt, anything from you, my man?
Nope.
All right, so before we move into our top threes, I mean, before we move into the Madison game, Matt, let's go ahead. Let's do our top threes.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Oh boy. Y'all want me to go first?
I can go first and give you guys a minute or two.
All right, go for it then.
All right, so 3 points. I'm going to give it to Neil Vigneault. Had an outstanding game. I'm hoping this is the game that gets him kick-started. We can get a second half surge for him. Two goals, like I said before. 43 passes completed in this game. 30 of them going forward, so that's positive. 2 points, I will give it to I'll give it to Emmy. Didn't really get on the score sheet, but he dictated play a lot, you know, helped get the penalty kick there. I mean, not penalty kick, free kick there, and has a good moments on and off the ball. 1 point, I'll give it to Landon Johnson. Made another impact subish role. 16-year-old, I mean, it's impressive. I mean, 16-year-olds to get on the field and have some moments there. I'll give you a point there for that. It's kind of hard for me kind of get points around anywhere else, but that's what I'm feeling. Shanair and Matt, I'll pass it off to y'all.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with, of course, 3 points for Neil. A brace, a dominant performance, very well. I think I'm going to give my 2 points to Terzaghi, to Emmy, just like you, Elliot. He did drop deep and get involved with play, started certain attacks, especially in the first half, drew the foul that led to the free kick goal. All around a decent performance from him. My 1 point, even though he scored an own goal, I'm going to give it to Fitch because he played a solid game at right back in this game. Can't ask too much more from him. The own goal is unlucky, like really, really unlucky for him, and it's unfortunate. I hope he can dust that off and keep it moving.
Okay. I mean, obviously 3 points is for Neil. That shouldn't need any further discussion.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, right here. I gave my two to Akira. You know, he had one huge save in the first half.
That was a very good save.
Yeah, that was point blank range too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, did a lot of good work in the second half, as well. Nothing as spectacular as that first half save, but I think he really helped to keep the team in the game. He was a key point, of the possession game throughout as well. And then, I also was, picking at straws for my 1 point. I gave it to Chris Cole. Thought he, came in and, played well. Didn't, really put much of a foot wrong that I can recall, at least. And I think that's a good sign, for, center back if you can't really remember anything that went, awry, back there. So, I give him my one, and hopefully, he's going to be able to continue to push forward in the center back role specifically.
Yeah,
that's the hope. That is the hope. I know I was asking you guys wrap up the game. Just I think the reason why we were kind of stumbling there on the 3 points, it wasn't so much because it's not like anyone had a truly bad performance. It's just individual errors at specific moments took a victory and made it a draw. That's kind of what you've seen a lot this year.
Yeah. If this was just like one random game somewhere, a little frustrating, but fine. They didn't play poorly. It was just some bad luck. This game compounded with, especially the last month or so. That's where I think a lot more of the negativity comes from.
Yeah, someone's there. So the kicker's next game is against that pink team. We owe them a loss. We owe them a beat. We got to get this Henny Darby Trophy back to Richmond, or at least make the season even. It's a tough week coming up for Richmond. I mean, after this game, they got another home game against NCFC midweek on that Wednesday, but focus on the Ford Madison game. They're coming off of a draw and a tough loss as well. So that kind of floundering in form there. What, I'm not going to ask you guys for like score predictions because those go awry, but what's prediction you're going with this game? Like, what is something that you're looking for in this game that's going to signify to you, like, okay, things are going good in Richmond's favor?
I just want to see two consistent halves. Like, it was two consistent, you know, decent halves, and it ends up a draw. So, I mean, that's not great for us, but so be it. In that case, you know, it's, you know, just the complete, you know, flipping of the switch. Like, yeah, last week you kind of saw it come with NoCo because they're a lot better than us anyway, and that first half was a massive fluke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we were even ahead, but. This one, you know, the Charlotte game, the Knoxville game, you know, countless others where it's in, you know, good shape and then, you know, just everything crumbles apart. Just avoiding that piece of it is what I'm hoping to see.
Yeah. Shanair, anything for you? What are you looking for specifically? I can never say that word.
I'm looking for that killer instinct. I'm looking for that killer instinct. I'm looking for them to actually look like they want to score.
Yeah.
For the entire game. Like, any chance where we can sniff out even a half chance, let's go for it. That's what I want to see against, especially against Ford Madison. You got to go all out in the derby.
I don't want to see us play scared, or I want to see us kind of put our foot on the throttle and go for it. Like, take chances from outside the box, you know, try to take players on, you know, don't. I think that's another thing, too. Maybe so. Like, I feel like we lost a little bit of that, of just that ability to take players on and, you know, try to go 1v1. I feel like it has to be like a combination of passes before we try to attempt. But for me, I want to see – I'm assuming we get a midfield trio of Neil, Zhao, and Zaka. I would love to see Zhao and Neil get significant touches in the midfield or in the final third and be able to pull the strings, you know, allow them to kind of dictate play and go from there. I would like to see that. And that would give me an indication that, you know, Richmond is up and ready to go for this game, because they're going to force Madison to kind of be on the back foot. You know, I want to see us, you know, put Madison on the back foot. Obviously, it helps if we get a goal early and we can really dictate it from there and not leave things late like we did last game. That being said, y'all, next week I won't be on the show because I'll be in Nashville enjoying my anniversary trip. So y'all have Matt, Shanair, yeah, hopefully Gabe and Kate as well. But guys, thank y'all again for helping out with the weekly therapy sessions these are turning into.
Let's try and see if next week we cannot be on the therapist's couch.
it's been a while since we've had a happy podcast. You know, we missed the happy pods. Gosh, this month has not gone well for us. Real quick, so in this month alone, we've played 5 games. We've picked up a grand total of 5 points out of a possible 15.
Yeah, not a ratio that's going to get it done.
But in the month of August, I will say this. We played 6. We played 6 games. 2 of those, which are midweek. Here's the thing. 4 of those are at home. Only 2 are on the road, and they're short road trips. Those are on the weekends, and both of them against Chattanooga, who we can do the season sweep against, and Lexington, who we can get the gentleman sweep against. We do, however, play North Carolina twice at home in Richmond. We end the month against Central Valley Fuego home, and we got Madison. Just want to ask you this. 18 points up for grabs in the month of August. How many points do you feel like Richmond needs to get to stay in or in and around that playoff race?
Stay in the race, I say 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say the same thing, around 9 or 10. It needs to be a win. It's at home. Central Valley are struggling. Hopefully they'll still be struggling by then because that's all the way at the end of the month. If we can play two halves, Lexington should be a win because we already showed that we can dominate them in the first half of this game. So we've already beaten them twice. Can we get the sweep? Those three where I would want us to get at least 2 points from are the two North Carolina games and the Ford Madison game. I want at least need to get 2 points. I know Ford Madison are on a rip right now. They're doing pretty well. They're winning games.
In their last five, they've only won one. So they're slightly downward, but yeah, I get what you're saying, Samir.
Yeah, but I mean they're playing better than they have in the past. And of course, when you go by that last time we played them, I mean, they were able to get that one up on us. I think I think we need to get at least 3 points from those three games, the two North Carolina games and the Ford Madison game.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, it's going to be an interesting month because, I mean, even though we're not mad at Richmond, I think we're just slightly disappointed and frustrated. The team kind of still holds its own destiny because in the month of September, we play against Union Omaha, Ford Madison, Greenville, Tormenta, all teams that we're competing against for the playoffs. So you come out of this month with positive points, you know, 9, 10, 11. You move into September, get a good positive amount of points out of there, and this the whole complexion of the season can change. But things tactically and mentally, you know, I don't want to question this team's spirit or heart because I know they're competing every single game, and we see it after the games. But the mentally and tactically, things got to be more aggressive and, you know, go after it more than playing it safe, I would say. Yeah. But, guys, I appreciate y'all for doing this show. You guys are awesome. Listeners, as always, we just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day for listening to our show, because without you, we couldn't do this. So much so, if you want to support the show, feel free. You can go over to anchor.fm, type in River City 92 there. You can support the show there. As much as a dollar a month can help us in producing this show, things of that nature. On the flip side of that, go head on over to rivercity93.com. You can keep up with the podcast from the women's side, men's side, youth side as well. YouTube videos are up there. Articles are up there as well. So help those support the show as well. And with that being said, for Matt, Chenier, and myself, we will catch you guys next time. See you at the next home game. Hopefully we'll have a happy podcast and a happy podcast that I can return to.
Yeah.
See you guys next time. Be easy. Be safe.